Thanks for dialing in on the Wintrust Business Lunch here on WGN. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Justin Reppy is a senior financial advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. I guess the question that you're still wrestling with is kind of the one that we all wrestle with about every day here, Justin. What's the forecast for a recession? And what do you say about that?
Yeah, John, that's a million-dollar question there, and there's definitely mixed opinions on it. I'm more in the camp that we are probably likely to see one within the next year or so. But if you were to go back 6 months or a year, I probably would have said the same thing, right? So, ultimately, it's going to be dependent a lot on the Federal Reserve and what their policies are going to look like going forward.
I'm in the camp of, so then what would that look like if it did happen? How different would my world be if, in fact, we were now today in a recession?
Well, it's certainly not going to be a severe one if we have one. It'll be rather mild in nature. You're going to see an uptick in unemployment, probably nothing crazy like 2008 or anything like that. I mean, we've already started to see a small uptick in unemployment, but it'll be a slowdown in hiring and corporate earnings. You'll likely see a continued decrease in inflation, hopefully. So it's not going to be too bad.
You probably aren't going to get the raise that you would have had otherwise. What will that do to the markets, would you say?
You know, honestly, the markets probably will hold their own. One thing that a lot of people don't fully realize is that the stock market and the U.S. economy aren't perfectly correlated with one another. Take last year, for example, in 2022, the market did very, very poorly overall from the general, indexes perspective, but corporate profits were one of the best years in recent history. We're still pretty darn bullish on the market, and we think that there's a lot of room for growth. But you're probably not likely to see a tremendous amount of growth like we've seen in prior years, prior to COVID, really.
So if the Fed agreed with you, then what would they be doing at their next meeting?
Well, then ultimately, if at a bare minimum, pausing the rate hikes, and really, I'm more of the camp that really in the near future, they should probably campaign to have rate cuts at some point in the next couple of months. But really, the Fed is really hell-bent on this 2% inflation rate, and, they're getting pretty darn close, but I don't know if they'll really be able to get there.
What's the number that we're at right now?
We're ticking just over 3% right now, so it's certainly substantially better from, last summer, when we were at the peak at 8 or 9%. So they've certainly brought it down a substantial amount. Whether or not they can bring it home and really get it down to 2% is still up in the air in my eyes.
Is there a big difference between 2 and 3?
Honestly, not really. It's rather minimal to be blunt.
Well, I mean, but it almost sounds random. I mean, I know 2 and 3 are less than 8 and 9, but what if they had said, okay, 3% was the goal, then they'd be happy. Then maybe they would do what you asked them to do.
Yeah, I definitely do think that would be the case. And really, 2% has been their target for, probably a decade plus now. For a very long period of time, really before COVID, we were running under 2%. Obviously, we're slightly above that. We'll see how it plays out. And the next Fed meeting is in about a week and a half here, so we'll get some more insight at that point.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm wondering is, does something happen at 2% that doesn't happen at 3%? And I'm hearing you say not necessarily.
No, not necessarily. I mean, it's a very, very minuscule difference at the end of the day.
Yeah, no kidding. Terry Savage was talking about this possibility of a recession, and she thinks it's more imminent. I think she was painting a somewhat more dire picture of things, or at least she was saying now is the time to get your house in order for a recession, especially if you're one of those people that's not going to have a job. What would you say about all of that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. You have to have a plan in place. Really, you want to just go back to the basics, right? Make sure that you have an emergency fund in place to cover, 6, maybe 9 months of emergency, liquid money that should you lose a job, you can make ends meet. Also, adjusting your portfolio and making sure that your investments are in a more all-weather approach, I'll call it, where no matter if you know, a good scenario happens or a bad scenario happens, you're going to be protected. And also looking at you know, some of the debts too. You know, credit card debt is really, really climbed up as a nation, and so making sure that you're trying to pay down some of those high interest credit cards is just a no-brainer at this point too.
Justin Reppy is a senior financial advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. Real interesting. Thanks for your help today, Justin.
Thanks for having me on, John.
Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at Seednet. Welcome back, Bree.
Happy to be with you.
Talk to me about the new iPhone. I just heard about this recently, and I thought, wait, there's another? It's like, how often do iPhones come out?
Well, it's once a year. It's, as I always say, it's around pumpkin spice latte kickoff.
Wow.
It's another sign of fall. The summer's over and fall is here. There are new iPhones coming. Apple's big event is set for Tuesday. And, you know, if things go as they have in past years, we're expecting another set of iPhones, another set of iPhone Pros, and probably watches, too.
Any special features on the phone that we should be looking to?
Well, as usual, Apple has been very, very quiet about this. I mean, their announcement for their event, just like every year, doesn't even mention new phones, but we all know they're coming. You know, the rumor mill has been swirling away. We're expecting possibly maybe the change to a USB-C connection. This is something that regulators in Europe have been pushing for. It's kind of a sustainability thing to get everything on the same kind of plug. So it's possible that Apple may switch over to that, though it could just be for the European markets.
Do they do that in Europe? Do all of the products have to have the same portal or port?
Well, that's something that the EU is now mandating. I don't know if they've started to enforce that or not, but, you know, Apple definitely would have some issues to deal with if they don't make the switch sometime soon. You know, if you think about it, it's been since 2012, since Apple has changed their plug. Before, remember, is that kind of wide thing that they got rid of, and people kind of freaked out because you had to buy all new accessories. This is going to be kind of along the same lines, possibly.
Well, there's three Apple products in my house that my wife and I share that all have different power cords. I have the magnetic oblong-shaped thing that goes into my Mac Pro, but then I have just the little thin plug that goes into my iPhone. But Brenda has a newer one, and she has a different jack for hers. And God forbid you lose one of those things. Now you're walking around the house looking for the compatible one.
And that's kind of what the EU has been saying. You know, they want everything kind of on the same plug. When people have to buy more connections and more plugs, that's more tech waste in landfills.
Yeah, right. Do they have an economic interest in consolidating or keeping them all separate? I wonder what would motivate Apple to comply.
Well, I mean, they don't want to deal with the EU potentially banning their phones or, you know, causing other kinds of problems. You know, Apple has been doing this for a long time. The Lightning cable is very small, and the smaller your port, the more space there is for other stuff. USB-C is a teeny bit bigger. It's already been used on iPads. So, you know, this could be the next step.
Well, what they're doing in Europe, and perhaps they might enforce in the United States where we do enact legislation like that, would that be for Apple and other manufacturers, or are we just talking about iOS stuff here?
Oh, no, it would be in Europe. It would be for all phones, just to kind of get everything on the same connection. That way, you know, you could use your same charging cord for Android as you could for Apple. And, you know, there probably are other smaller phone makers out there, too, that still have proprietary cables. I mean, I have boxes of cables from, you know, kiddie tablets and all kinds of tech. It's really annoying to have to, you know, have all these different things. And some of it, I don't even know what they go to.
I was going through a box of stuff this past weekend, and I found all kinds of different media of video of my kids throughout the years. You know, VHS tapes, compact videotapes, DVDs, DVR stuff. And I don't have any of the players or the cables and cords to watch them. And I know there are businesses out there, but it's just kind of a shame, right? Like, I can't pop these things into anything because I don't have the hardware anymore.
Right. I mean, I just moved, and I've found boxes and boxes of VHS and DVDs, and it's kind of, you know, you're scared to throw stuff out, especially those old VHS tapes. I mean, it could be family videos,
yeah.
But it also could be just a movie that I recorded off of TV 20 years ago. Who knows?
Yeah, it might be an episode of Matlock you don't need to see. Or it could be your first birthday of your kid, you know, so you gotta hold on to all that stuff. And in fact, those videotapes are deteriorating as they sit there, right?
Right. I mean, it reminds me of my parents had, you know, old movie, you know, 9mm film stuff for years. And some of this dated back to stuff that my grandparents took. And, you know, we try to unwind it and put it into a movie projector, and it would just crumble.
Yeah, yeah. My parents have old granite tablets that the carved images in.
Well, those hold up pretty well, though.
Yeah, right, but that's true. Talk to me about the Google antitrust suit.
Yeah, so Google has gotten very, very big since it was founded about 25 years ago. And the Justice Department has been pursuing an antitrust case against them for about 3 years now, and it is finally set to go to trial next week unless something happens. This is the first monopoly trial of the modern internet era. I mean, the last time there was antitrust action like this taken, it was, you know, in the last century against Microsoft, and the world has changed a lot since then. The government claims that Google, you know, illegally cemented its dominance in the search engine industry by squashing competition and paying Apple and other companies to make its search engine the dominant one on their platforms. You know, they say that these deals weren't exclusive and that consumers always had an option to use something else, but the government takes issue with that.
Well, other platforms have had the opportunity to come and go, ask Jeeves and Bing. I mean, what did Google do that kept them from being successful?
Well, they paid companies like Apple to make these the default options. And, you know, while you could manually go in and change your settings to make, mm-hmm. you know, something like Safari or Yahoo or Ask Jeeves or all these things that have occurred over the years, your default option, most people tend to leave the defaults as their defaults.
Yeah, that is true. I've got other questions about other issues, but we've taken too much time on my going down memory lane there with the old videos and movies. So we'll
nothing wrong with that.
Well, we'll pick this conversation up next week. Thank you, Bree.
Thanks so much.
Here's Alex Gailey, analyst at Bankrate.com. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm great today.
Just a really interesting article here. 78% of those who hold the 20 most lucrative college degrees are men. The 20 most lucrative college degrees, 78% of those who hold those degrees are men. What's your take on that?
Well, when I was looking at which college majors lead to the highest and lowest median salaries, I decided to take it a step further by also analyzing who is really in that sort of top 20 that is dominating, you know, those high paying majors, which are all in STEM. And what I found was that it is men predominantly there that are going into these higher paying majors in STEM and ultimately sort of making the big bucks. And I was really surprised by the data because, you know, there's been such a push for women to go into STEM and to go into these higher paying degrees. And so I was really shocked to see that this is still the way things are now today.
I wonder if maybe this is an improvement on where we were 10 years ago.
Absolutely. It is an improvement. Women are majoring in STEM and going into STEM careers more than ever. What I think is surprising is that the progress has just maybe been slower than you would have expected in 2023. So definitely want to point out there's been great progress made, and you know there are more women than ever in the college educated workforce. There are more women than ever going on to get higher education. There's actually more women on college campuses than men currently.
So the most profitable degrees, maybe not surprisingly, are number one, electrical engineering. The median salary, if you have that degree, is $110,000. Number two, computer engineering, $104,000. Pharmacy and pharmaceutical sciences and administration, chemical engineering, computer sciences, all six figures. Aerospace engineering, engineering, math and science engineering, physics, petroleum engineering, general engineering. The only one that maybe is an outlier here is the pharmaceutical category. Number three on the list, 56% of the people that hold those degrees are female. But otherwise, it's very lopsided the other way.
Yeah, so pharmacy is the outlier in the top 20. Also, health and medical preparatory programs towards the bottom of that 20 is a little bit more split between male and female degree holders. So what's interesting about those two being at the top that lead to the highest median salaries is that, you know, women, when they do go into STEM, they do tend to go more towards those health-related STEM fields and go on to become doctors and surgeons, and even nursing is a really popular degree among women, and pharmacy as well. And so you do see those are the two kind of outliers in that top 20 list of the highest median salaries.
But you have the flip of this then, don't you? That is, those areas that are dominated by women, and the median salaries are less than half of those on the degrees held by men. You know, maybe that's prejudicial, or maybe that's just that, in fact, society values electrical and computer engineering right now more than early childhood education and elementary education and nursing. But it's pretty stark, the difference, isn't it?
Yes, the difference is very stark between female-dominated majors and the salaries attached to those. And then even if you want to also just look at male-dominated majors and those salaries attached to that, the range is a lot higher for the male-dominated majors. You see those, you know, over six figures, whereas more female-dominated majors are more in the $40,000 to $70,000 range if you're looking at the top 20, for example. And it really peaks at $70,000 with nursing, where 89% of degree holders are women. And there's actually research that really interesting, fascinating research that was done that looked from 1950 to 2000, that period where women were starting to go more into male-dominated fields, and what happened to pay during that time. And what actually, in fact, happened is that degrees that or fields that were dominantly male and then started to become more skewed towards female, the pay decreased significantly over that period of time. And the opposite happens with men who tend to dominate certain fields. It's seen as more prestigious or desirable, and the pay tends to increase.
So college major, early childhood education, 96% of early childhood education majors are female, 96%. You know, forget about how much money one group is going to make versus another. Society would be better. You don't need me to editorialize to you or anybody else, but it would be better if more men were in early childhood capacities. I presume that society would benefit if women were in engineering degrees or capacities as well. But literally for the raising of children, that's kind of a sad number for me. The median salary is $43,000. That's number one. Number two, communication, disorder, sciences and services, $57,000. Family and consumer sciences, $45,000. LEd, $48,000. And then nursing, $70,000. All of those, 90% or higher of the degree holders are women.
Yes, and I want to add that, you know, women going into education and nursing and social sciences, that is sort of a very noble thing to do, and it's because they want to have impact. And same with men going into engineering or going on to be doctors or surgeons, you know, they want to have impact. That's not the problem here. What the problem is that there's an overrepresentation of women in low-paying degrees and an underrepresentation of women in high-paying degrees. So it's just not quite even when it comes to these degrees, and that really sort of impacts labor market incomes and, you know, contributes or maintains the gender wage gap we see overall between men and women in the workforce.
And you commented on this just a moment ago, Alex, but straighten me out on that again. What would happen if more women were in fact getting engineering degrees, or if more men were going into the social sciences? What do you know or expect would happen to the respective salaries of those two groups?
So based on the research that has been done by sociologists, there definitely needs to be more research done on this. But it did show from 1950 to 2000, when you saw women moving into more traditionally male-dominated fields, the pay tended to decrease. And then the opposite happened for men who moved into, who dominated certain fields, their pay would increase over time. And that really sort of speaks to, you know, whose work do we value in society and in the economy? And there are there's a lot of research and data points that really show that women's work are just not as valued in our economy. And so it's really not surprising to see that all these really heavily female dominant majors are making, you know, significantly less than the male-dominated majors we see.
That's a really interesting observation, too. So if more men were to go into early childhood education, where on average the median salary is $43,000, they would say, well, guys are doing this work, and we got to pay them more. That's kind of the that's what you're saying there. That would actually elevate it, not because they're superior necessarily, but that's their tradition. Men get more money than women. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, in a hypothetical world, that is what that's what the research and the data would indicate.
Alex Gailey, Gailey's report on this is at bankrate.com, and it's very interesting. It's nice to talk to you today. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Grocery store chains Kroger and Albertsons are in talks with a third-party company to buy some stores in a move aimed at winning regulatory approval for their merger. Bloomberg reports some stores could be sold to C&S Wholesale Grocers. The companies had previously said between 100 and 400 stores could be sold or spun off to help the merger go through. It's unclear how many of the stores C&S might buy. There's been no comment from the three companies. Kroger owns Mariano's in the Chicago area, and Albertsons owns Jewel Osco. The city of Chicago wants to become a primary food hub for the country. A request for proposals has been launched for two programs, including the Good Food Program and the Early Stage Food Incubator. Both are designed to address disparities in the food industry and reduce barriers faced by food businesses, especially those who've struggled to receive investment. Both programs will help small businesses and startup entrepreneurs on Chicago's South and West Sides get access to capital. The goal is also to find more markets for locally grown and regionally produced food. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And if you think dinner on a farm sounds like fun,
oh, yum.
There's one you can go to this Sunday without even leaving the city. More about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, dinner on the farm. It doesn't get any more farm to fork than that, does it? This one is a four-course sit-down family-style meal prepared by a popular Evanston Mexican restaurant, Zently. It is Sunday on a farm in Skokie. Yeah, there's a farm in Skokie. Only 2.5 acres, but it's a farm. It's called the Talking Farm. Does it talk?
It does if you listen at the right times, I think.
Jason Holm is the production manager at the Talking Farm in Skokie.
The name actually comes from the fact that we're an education farm.
He says it began with an idea about 20 years ago.
Mostly Evanston residents got together talking about the importance of food and food-related issues and what they could do about it.
And what they did was find a large piece of vacant land in Skokie.
Owned by the Skokie Park District on Howard Street, right next to an Amazon facility.
And that is where the farm talks.
We teach people how to grow vegetables and flowers for themselves, for their community, or as a potential career change.
Years ago, the property had been a horse farm, but when the gardeners got there, it was way overgrown.
Shrubs and buckthorn and willows and weedy trees and shrubs.
Now the Talking Farm has 1.5 acres of land in production.
And this year we'll actually plant out the last couple of fields in our master plan.
And by the way, are there any animals on the Talking Farm?
Unfortunately, there are more rabbits than we would care to have. But yeah, no animals intentionally kept.
Dinner on the Farm. It's Sunday. A few extra tickets have been released. Tickets can be had at thetalkingfarm.org. Thetalkingfarm.org. and a part of the ticket price is tax deductible. Also, the Talking Farm sells its produce each week at the farmers markets in Andersonville, Skokie, and Evanston. From the farm to your belly, today is National Acorn Squash Day. It's National Salami Day, and that pairs nicely with National Beer Lovers Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Aki Ito joins us again, senior correspondent at Insider. You can click on businessinsider.com to learn about something I didn't know was happening. Aki, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
People secretly are using ChatGPT on their jobs, huh?
Yeah. I think people have responded to ChatGPT since it's come out last winter in all kinds of ways. Some people are just absolutely refusing to use it. They're scared about what this means for their job security. You know, other people are kind of just watching the headlines but not really doing anything about it. But there's actually kind of, you know, like a bigger share of the working population than you might expect who are secretly using it, often against their company's backs. And that's what my story was about.
Did you coin the phrase cheat GPT?
I think so. I think I was the first person.
That's yeah. Good. Did a robot write that or did you come up with that on your own?
You know, my editor actually came up with that. So, yeah, it was a human who came up with the catchphrase. Yeah.
So to be clear, I mean, this technology really hasn't been that mainstream for that long. But out of the gate, people were using it against the company's wishes or knowledge because either the company didn't endorse it or didn't know how to utilize it. Some people did. And I think you report they're coming out ahead when they do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, early studies have shown just how much faster you can do certain tasks with the help of ChatGPT. There's one study that shows that it's making computer programmers about 50% faster. In another study, simple writing tasks, people were doing those tasks about 30% faster when they're assisted with ChatGPT. But the thing is, a lot of companies are really scared of using this technology at the moment. There are some security concerns, some privacy concerns, often that are well-founded. And so as a result, they either haven't come out with guidance at all for employees on ChatGPT use, or they've banned it altogether. But the thing is, you know, we as employees, you know, we'll go for anything that will make our jobs a little bit easier, that will help us save a little bit of time, right? To clock off a little bit early or to be able to go to the gym or whatever. So I think that's why so many people are using it secretly and quietly.
Or to make more money. If you're in a job that more work means more revenue, then more power to you. I believe you described in your article, say you're just doing a lot of entry of data. Maybe it's, you know, medical codes or price points or something. A computer probably could scan and post that for you. Is that one of the ways that ChatGPT would help expedite things for somebody?
Yeah. So, the one person who I started my story with, he is, a benefits advisor at an insurance company. So what he did was he started using Bing Chat, which is kind of like Microsoft's version of ChatGPT, to get the bot to generate the medical codes that he needs to be able to find. When you go through kind of a list or when you use Google search, this is a process that used to take him, several minutes. But now he can do it instantaneously because Bing just spits it out to him. So that was a real time savings for him. And as a result, he was resolving his calls a lot faster than his colleagues, which is a big way that, people like him get evaluated on the job.
Mm. One last thing, then. I presume you will conclude that this is coming, right? Like, you might be resistant to it or you might not be good at it yet, but there's no turning this thing back, right?
I think that's right. I think there is some like overhyping of this technology, but you know, in the coming year or two, I think a lot of companies are going to learn how to be able to do this safely without compromising, you know, security or privacy, the things that they're worried about right now. There's so many more enterprise solutions that are coming out. So when that happens, you know, companies are not going to, you know, punish their employees for using ChatGPT. They're actually going to reward them. They're going to want to hire people who can do this well.
Yeah. I mean, why cut off your nose to spite your face? If somebody's got a quicker way to do it, do it. Aki Ito is a senior correspondent. You can read this article at businessinsider.com. Aki, thanks for giving us the heads up. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.